I want to welcome everyone to our Keeping on Track Up in Line, our topic today, three dangerous trends handcuffing your revenue. My name is Dana Barocca. I'm the CEO of Lighthouse Consulting Services and will be hosting our program today. We have a few housekeeping items and we'll jump right into our topic. For those of you joining us for the first time, Lighthouse provides in-depth work style and personality assessments for both new hire candidates and for staff development. We also offer a number of workshop topics to associations and trade organizations, and if you'd like more information, please email me as indicated on your screen. Our Keeping on Track Open Line series is in response to a number of calls we've been getting from many of our clients, both domestically and globally, to address the various business issues that most organizations are facing today. Our goal is to make this an interactive program. On your screen, you'll see an area you can send questions or ideas during our discussion, and we'll attempt to respond to as many of you as possible. So please join us with your thoughts and insights you have along the way. You'll also want to have some paper and a pen handy to take notes, since we'll be sharing many ideas you can consider and implement with your team and trusted advisors. Our special guest with us today is Joe Vanna. Joe is a longtime friend, a business colleague, and client. Joe has over 36 years of business experience, has been president and CEO of CardKey Systems, as well as having a vast recruiting and sales training background both domestically and globally. Around 10 years ago, Joe founded and is the CEO of Security Search and Consulting at Advanced Search Partners. I feel privileged to have Joe with us today and to share the ideas for dealing with today's business issues that Joe is very versed on. He hears about daily from clients that he works with from around the world, and this is going to be a very exciting program. If you have other managers, supervisors, staff members you want to have join on in, please call them up, text them, have them come on in your office and join us for today. Also, registration for our next program will begin at the end of today's program. We were maxed out on today's, by the way. We had a certain amount of slots, so we went over that number, and so we have a waiting list, which is really nice. Joe, welcome. Thanks for doing the program today and being part of it.
Thank you, Dana. That was very nice and very touching. My mother would have enjoyed that. I just wanted to say to everyone that we're going to talk today about three trends that are affecting all companies across all industries and all market segments. There's really five trends, but we're only going to talk about three. The other two have to do, one is with technology and technological advances and products and services, and the other has to do with consolidations and mergers that are affecting a lot of industries. But we're going to talk about three. And a lot of companies will call and talk about beefing up their sales force, and they think that by adding some salespeople that they're going to fix their sales problem when in fact it's really not the issue. What I'm going to do is I'm going to show you what's going on internally, first of all, within an organization, and we're going to talk about that from the perspective of your employees and your client base. And what you're going to see out there is companies that are struggling all have some common issues. And basically, we've got to look first at the engine of the organization. The engine of the organization is our team. And I'm not just talking about our sales team. I'm talking about our entire organization. And what you need to see is what's going on with your people mentally. And emotionally. And no matter what media form they're looking at on a daily basis, there is information out there that is really hurting their psyche. For example, all of these negative issues that have to do with people out of work, people losing their homes, construction at a standstill, banks not lending, companies' revenues and profits being down, so on and so forth. All of these things are really making people feel insecure. They see their own vendors failing. 69% of companies that are failing are saying it's a sales problem or a weak pricing or a discount problem. And so small businesses as well as mid-sized businesses are all struggling as well. So obviously, what's going on out there is that the employees are caught up in what we call a general malaise, a paralysis, a form of not able to engage and commit to what their duties and responsibilities are. And, you know, you have to ask yourself, what's going on in the employee organization? How do we get out of that? What's going on? So when you really get into the data, and this is right out of all the research that is coming into us, is when you look at that figure here, 55% across all industries, 55% people are dissatisfied with their positions. The level of dissatisfaction has doubled over the last 22 years, and where in the past it only affected young people because they would come in and they'd want it sooner rather than later, more of it than less of it, it really was only in the younger people, the low-income brackets. Now it is across the board. It is from entry level to senior leadership. So you can see that people are absolutely dissatisfied. And what's happening is the employers don't have their hands around it. In fact, when they did a survey, they asked employers, you know, what percentage of their people do you think have gone out and looked for jobs? They said about a third, 37%. When in fact, almost double the number of employees are out looking for a position. So you can imagine now sitting there, having your organization in front of you, and realizing that virtually two-thirds of those people have been looking for alternative employment over the last 12 months. I mean, it's gotten to the point in some organizations, very honestly, where they've become what we call adult daycare centers. There's so much negativism with whining and gossip. It's really preventing people from really executing their duties and responsibilities and performing at the level that they were brought in to perform. It's to the point now where people that you have counted on for years, critical key people, are abandoning the organization and looking for alternative employment. We're getting calls from employees that have been in companies for in excess of 20 years. And it's interesting to hear, and I'll share that with you in a couple minutes, of why they're trying to leave their organizations. In fact, the level of dissatisfaction is touching the client, it's touching the gross margin line, it's touching the bottom line, it's touching the revenue line. And you know what's funny, though, is the leadership is still sitting there saying, well, you know, the economy ebbs and flows. And as soon as the economy starts to come back, we know that all of our people are going to be happy again. Well, let me show you what the research says. The research says that the majority of the dissatisfaction has nothing to do with the economy. And I'm going to leave that slide up there for a second. The five areas of concern, number one is wages. Wages are an irritant. Wages are an irritant. People do not leave strictly for more money. If that were the case, no one would ever keep their people of any length at any time. Employers, and by the way, that should say employees are taking on more costs. I apologize. That's health care. That is where employers are pushing down more costs in terms of lack of benefits than they used to get. So the employees are picking up more of those costs. Nobody's happy with their vacation, but those first three bullets are what I would tell you are just irritants. No one is going to leave over those three bullets. The reason that they're leaving are over the last two bullets. The absence of training. Now, I call it an absence of training. What the employees are saying, honestly, is that the company is not investing in my professional growth and development. And then the last item is leadership. Now, the leadership comes from the point that employees are losing confidence in their leadership because they feel that they've never navigated in this type of economy before. In fact, let's face it, not many of us, unless you're my age, 60 or 61, have really been through the recessions that were in the late 70s, and I think we had some problems in the in the 80s. But this recession that we've encountered in 2008, 2009, none of us have seen anything like it. So this lack of confidence is really hurting people. And you know what's interesting is there are companies out there that are performing effectively, and they have organizations that are very healthy. And I want you to see what the statistics are for organizations that are performing at a high level. This is when everyone is working together for a common goal, don't have that malaise, that paralysis, or that lack of commitment. This is what can be accomplished by an organization. This is, and we're not talking about adding any salespeople. We're just talking about getting our internal organization healthy. So a lot of companies are focusing on this area. They're focusing on what are the things that we can do now to take this poor health that we've identified, and how do we get this to a level of satisfaction? What can we do to alter this? What can we do to eliminate what we call these energy vampires that are sucking the enthusiasm and the energy from our people within the organization? And, you know, one of the webinars, somebody brought up something cute, and I'll share this with you. Do you remember Top Gun, Dana? You remember Maverick and Top Gun?
Great show.
Well, if you remember the movie, at the end of the movie, he had lost his co-pilot. He's lost his girlfriend. He didn't do well in school. They sent him back out to sea, and there was a mission where they needed his help. He was sent up to help, and yet he was suffering from that paralysis of what to do, that general malaise, that inability to take action or make a commitment. And if you remember, his pilots and the people on the carrier were screaming at him, "Maverick, we need you to engage, Maverick, engage, engage." And then finally at the end, he took positive action, he engaged, and everybody in the theater clapped, and everybody got goosebumps, and it was just a wonderful thing. Well, that's what's happening in today's business world, is we need the leadership to get back and engage with their employees. They've got to rebuild trust and communicate with them at all levels, keeping them challenged and excited. In fact, the research talks about that making it fun again, challenging people, making it fun again, and showing them how to win is truly, in today's marketplace, in business, truly a lost art. It's really disappointing to hear that. And you notice the last item, which was one of those two compelling bullets that were what we call big dissatisfiers, invest in your people's growth and development. So this is the area right here where the majority of leadership, if they're going to rebuild the health of their organization, they have to do it here, not just going out and adding salespeople. That isn't going to solve the problem. It's like building a beautiful home on a poor foundation. You know it's just going to be a matter of time before there's a problem. So if we can get everybody working together at the highest level,
I got a question for you. Just
sure.
Came in regarding the training. What are you seeing as far as the areas that are being requested for training, and any ideas as to
if you'll just bear with me and hold that off to the side. When we get to the third trend,
okay,
we're gonna talk a lot about training and some of the things that organizations can do without spending a lot of money,
okay,
on professional development. Okay,
great.
So,
and also, if any areas questions along the way, please submit them, and we'll see how many we can take in today.
But let's go back to the end result here. The end result is we're trying to get back to this. We're trying to get our organization, our internal organization, healthy. Remember, this is technical support. This is accounting, finance, customer service, sales, whatever the various functions are internally, whether they touch the client, they touch other employees, they can't basically divide the organization. We've got to get that health back. So that's the key trend And if I had to make a general explanation, this trend is about the fact that employees are disenchanted. They're not committed. They're not excited. They're not enthusiastic. And you remember the old saying that enthusiasm breeds enthusiasm. Well, the opposite of that is also true. The lack of enthusiasm also breeds a lack of enthusiasm. That's why this internal organization has to be focused on, and it has to begin to get healthy again. Now, the second trend is about the client base. We've talked about the employees. What's happening with the client base? Well, we all know that the fundamental rule in sales and marketing is to protect our existing client base, sell more products and services to our existing client base. Now, if there's anybody here that, you know, disagrees with that, I'd love to see a message and maybe perhaps how they're going after that. But the cardinal rule of sales and marketing from everything you will ever read is you've built your business around a client base that has to be protected at all costs. And we know, for example, that add-ons, upgrades, service contracts, obviously depending on the products and services that you're selling, it's always more profitable to sell to your existing customer base than it is to go out and find new business. And again, that's the research that tells us that. It's less expensive to work with your existing customers than to go out and find new ones. We know that our existing customer base will pay their bills. They may not pay net 30, but eventually they will pay their bills. We know that the clients or referrals that we get from our existing clients are normally more profitable. And what we'll see is companies that are really pushing their sales force out to go after new business, where you may have double-digit competitors sitting in the lobby waiting to go after the same project. So the first question that you have to ask yourself as an organization is, I've got this wonderful client base out that I've built over the years through blood, sweat, and tears. What are our clients saying about us? Wouldn't it be great if every entity knew exactly what their clients are truly saying about them? Well, before we can answer that, I want to share a couple concepts with you. And I'm sure most of you know about what we call fair share, mind share concepts. But in the event that you don't, the goal for every business in the beginning is, you've heard this old saying, Dana, you know, there's enough business out there for everybody. And so the goal is to go out, start a business, get a certain level of client base, and you start to gain some confidence, and you have what we call a fair share of the business. And as the business matures and you become more confident and better and skilled at what you do, you now want to control the entire marketplace. You want to get what we call mind share. Mind share is when someone thinks about certain products, they think about that brand name. For example, if they're thinking about a beverage, they think of Pepsi rather than Coke. If they're thinking about a tissue, they think about Kleenex versus someone else. So that's what you're building for. Every company's ultimate goal is to build mind share, that when somebody is thinking about a problem or a solution to a problem, they're thinking about your brand. That's where we want to go. So basically, you go out to the clients and you ask the clients, how do you feel about ABC Company? And they say, well, we feel we've been abandoned. We feel we've been abandoned by these folks because we don't even hear from them anymore. In fact, we hear more from their competitors trying to get our business than we do from the organization that has our business. This is a real problem, and it's costing companies millions and millions of dollars because they're walking away from their core client base. Well, you know what? It's not major surgery. You know, you talk about, well, what's the research say? What do we got to do to fix it? Well, you know, if you're going to fix something, you go back to the fundamentals. And the first fundamental is you're looking in the mirror, and you're saying, why are we chasing new accounts? What we're not in control of our current customer base? Are the revenue goals so aggressive that we're abandoning our client base to go after new business? Do we even have revenue goals or quotas for our core clients? Do we have the same rep selling to our core client base as we do going after new business? And are they incentivized to ignore the existing client base? So that's really an important question that you have to look in the mirror and ask yourself. And then what do you have in place for your existing core clients that make you the preferred supplier? Do they get special pricing and payment terms? Is the after-sale care program so great that they can't resist? You know, do you have a specific rep that handles a certain niche? And must they touch those existing customers so many times within a certain period of time? And do you have referral programs put in place? So on and so forth. So you can see we're basically talking here basic sales and marketing principles that a lot of organizations have lost sight of. Now, look at this question. This question here says, whenever someone engages a client, whether it's somebody collecting money from the receivables or a customer service person or a senior level of executive, does the company have such a compelling value proposition that all of the employees can express it across the breadth of the organization to any customer, any potential client they come in contact with? A lot of companies, when you ask them what's the compelling value proposition that would cause someone to leave one of their competitors to join them, they just don't have any ideas on what that means. Well, obviously it means what are the things that you do and the way you treat your people, your clients, your employees, what are all those things that you do that would make a client compelled to work with you? And please remember the word is compelled. Compelled. Now, the last item on the fundamentals is basically asking yourself, the people that interact with our client base, have they been trained to touch that client in the right way? Whether they're coming from the help desk, tech support, receivable, doesn't matter. You notice the last item here is receptionist. It's interesting. The research talks about the fact that the receptionist is probably the lowest person in the totem pole, probably gets paid the least of anywhere in the organization, but yet they're the first point of contact for any organization that calls in. In fact, a lot of companies have left these webinars and called into their receptionist to find out, you know, who they could talk to for a certain project or whatever, only to find out that the receptionist just doesn't have a clue who they should speak to, what the company does, so on and so forth. And so it's interesting, if you looked at the receptionist, you may want to look at that receptionist in a different light and call that receptionist maybe the manager of first impressions. Or the manager of lead generation, because you see at the bottom here, you know, it takes months to land great projects, profitable projects, and only a moment of indifference to lose a wonderful opportunity. And a lot of that is happening by the way these folks interact with clients on a daily basis. So it's interesting to pull those people together, Dana, at some point and ask them, you know, when you talk to people, when you talk to clients that are upset or having a problem, whatever, after you've solved the problem, do you ask them if there's anything else in the organization that they can do to help as far as products, services, maybe a lead, so on and so forth? You know, you could look at every one of these people and realize that is a lead generation machine, just not a overhead. A lot of companies will look at these positions as an overhead. You could turn that into a lead generation machine. And again, you haven't even hired a salesperson yet, and you can see what you can start accomplishing again. So let's look at some of the actions that we've got to take when it comes to the client base. It's almost the same thing as when you're trying to get the health of your internal organization healthy. Here we are. We have to re-engage with each client. We have to, I guess, re-establish trust. Maybe some companies will establish user groups or how often we need to follow up, the frequency of calls. I know in some organizations, Dana, we have what we call a sundown rule. I don't know if you've ever heard of that. But a sundown rule means that every call that comes into that organization is returned by the end of the business day. This thing where a client will call and say, I've been calling your people for a week and I don't get a return phone call, that's just taken care of immediately. So you can see here at the bottom what we talk about when we get to the client. And whether it's the client or it's the employee, it's critical, absolutely critical, that we reestablish trust and build confidence with that client. Do you really think that client wants to go out and find a new vendor when they've been working with you for years? All they want is some tender love and care, and they just can't seem to get it. So obviously you can see this is a piece of cake. We can start taking action on these things this afternoon. We can get our people together, our internal group, our external group, and we can start taking these actions immediately. Now, the second trend is, to just to recap, is companies have let their clients go. They've let them disappear. They're focusing so much on new business to drive the revenue line that they're losing their clients to competition. First trend is our employees are dissatisfied. They're not healthy mentally. Second trend is the clients feel like they've been abandoned. We can fix this, okay? The third thing is what we talked about earlier, and you brought the question up, is the training. The third negative trend is what we call the training issues, the lack of training, which is driving what we call the employee turnover. It's bleeding turnover. And then the exorbitant cost of replacing these people. So you can imagine if we can stop losing good people, now we don't have to go out and make bad hiring decisions where now we've almost duplicated the cost again. And I'm going to show you what's happening with this. Most companies, the majority of companies, have eliminated training and development as what they call an unnecessary overhead. And so what that means to those of you that manage a profit and loss statement, it basically means there's no line item in your profit and loss statement for training expenses. There's no line item for that. So they actually believe that because they don't do anything in the form of training, that they're getting away with it. Well, in fact, it is in the P&L. Where it's at is you don't meet your revenue targets. Your gross margin is several percentage points less than what you budgeted for. And your EBITDA number is also several points less than what you budgeted for. But you can pat everyone on the back because they don't have a line item that calls for training and professional development. And what's interesting about this is you don't have to go out and spend thousands of dollars on training and development. What most organizations are doing is they will take an ad hoc group of internal resources. For example, if you're going to be training people on the sales side, they'll get their best salespeople within the organization to do a train-the-trainer type deal or a sales training function. They can bring in some outside resources. And believe me, through the ad hoc group and some what we call minimal outside resources, you can dramatically improve performance in the first 12 months. Now, let me take the sales. Since everybody's concerned about revenue, let's take a sales rep, for example, and let's look at all of the things that a sales rep has to have when you put them in the war zone. They've got to know the product. They've got to have great prospecting skills as well as probing and listening skills, great communication skills. They've got to handle objections well. They've got to make sure that they're gaining commitment along every step of the process, and they've got to negotiate the best pricing, and then they have to be able to deal with adversity well, and in case they lose the project, then they've got to go do it all over again. So when you look at all of the things that a sales rep has, if you think you can go out and just hire someone tomorrow that has all of those ingredients, you're wrong. You're going to have to go out and you're going to have to invest. And it's cheaper to invest in training and development than losing your people. But unfortunately, here's what's happening. This is from all the research. We've all heard of the 80-20 rule. Look at this. 55% of people in sales should be doing something else. Another 20 to 25 should be selling something else. And basically what's happening is we're still getting, in 2010, we're still getting just undesirable results 80% of the time. So let's go back to the sales rep. I know organizations, in fact, I had one myself, where we actually developed a chapter of Toastmasters within our organization. It met one day a week for an hour, and I can tell you that we had people in from engineering, document control, quality, product support, marketing, sales. You could actually see the metamorphosis of people over a 9 to 12 month period by engaging them in that type of professional development. You know, those of you that really want to put a great sales force in, there's outside sources like spin selling, strategic selling, CRAS, effective negotiating training that you can get to come and to your site and run a overall program for you, as well as learning more and more from your various product manufacturers, if you're product people, about the products, what the applications are, who to sell it to, what the hot buttons are, so on and so forth. So when you look at the external resources that are available, there really isn't anyone out there that can afford it. Now, there's also programs out there for marketing, project managers, engineers, quality. All of this training and development with the use of the Internet and the various online programs, there isn't any reason to really back off of training and development. You know, if you look at all the people that you've looked up to over the years in business, what do they say? They say everything about hiring top people has to be the primary task. So when you're losing people, and many of you have probably lost some key people, certainly we want to train the people we have, get them reinvigorated, so on and so forth. But you know at some point you're going to lose key people. And what's happening is the cost of replacing these people has just become out of sight. Now, I want to show you this slide, what we call the cost of a bad hire. You'll notice that, and most of you from the direct costs all see this, the hiring costs, you know, the recruiting fees, background checks, travel expenses, the compensation that you're going to pay, severance. We know how to identify those costs on each line item. Here's what's interesting is what we call the indirect costs of a bad hire. And I want you to look at this middle section called the cost of poor performance. Basically, what that is talking about, and in this case, this is a product marketing person. This is a product marketing person and I will show you the numbers on this. It's an actual case. This is a product marketing person who actually failed in a product launch. They didn't get the product to market on time to their distribution. They created poor reputations. They lost their revenue projections. Their on-time deliveries were a problem. So their missed opportunities that they lost to competition absolutely killed them. But not only that, if you look at here, the cost of poor morale down at the bottom, this is what we call a trickle-down cost. This is when the company is performing so poorly and people have missed and I guess not performed and executed their duties and responsibilities, that the people that you count on most start questioning what's going on in the organization, and if this is the way it's going to be, I probably need to look at something else. So when you look at the actual plugged-in numbers on the cost of a bad hire, look at these numbers. Item one, that's a direct cost in the hiring. Look at the compensation. This person was in the job for basically a year and a half. The compensation was $102,000. Look at the item five, the cost of the missed opportunity. And then you see here the cost of disruption. That's the trickle-down cost. Look at the cost of that bad hire. This is comes right out of the research, and basically what the research says is, in this case, it was 14 times the base salary. The cost of this bad hire was 14 times the base salary. The average is somewhere between 8 and 15 times, depending on the level of the person in the organization. We have one client that every time they lose a person, they take an accrual hit on their P&L of about $250,000. They just put that as a flat fee, and they call it the cost of a bad hire, $250,000. So you can see how critical hiring, when you do have to go out and replace someone, when you can't save them, when you can't train them and get excited, you've got to go out, and now we've got to have a goal. And the goal is we only want to hire an A player, or we are willing to hire a B player that can be professionally groomed and trained and developed to become that A player. So, Dana, I hope that you're kind of getting a gist for the goal is to get people trained, excited, get them in the war, get them fighting the battles. But when we do lose someone, we've got now to go out and say we're not just going to bring in mediocrity. I'm going to show you a list of companies. I want to show you a list of companies that their only goal is when they have to go out, when they do lose someone, their only goal is to hire an A player. So you've got a pretty good representation here. It's just a very short list of companies. They have one thing in common, and that thing is to go out and find A players. Here's where they find them. This is where those organizations find A players, basically through their own employees, basically through the vendors that they work with, subcontractors, if they work with subcontractors. It's amazing how your clients will tell you who calls on them that they look up to and admire. Associations, and then basically if you've run out of those sources, if you exhausted those areas, then you want to pull in an organization that can go out and start to profile those A players for you, and hopefully from your competition. And here's why it's so critical. I want to show you, and I'm going to let you read these, but this is why it's so critical that you bring in an A player. I'll give you a second to look through those. We talk about building relationships, building trust, being resourceful, demonstrating greater teamwork, finding a way to get the job done in less time with less cost. Let me show you how you turn those 12 advantages into a metric. Here's some performance criteria from different organizations. Look at that. Manufacturing operations, where they have A players running the show. Look at the profitability. Look at the return to shareholders, where they have this focus on only bringing in A and B players.
Wow. Oh, my goodness.
And look at the top 3% of salespeople, Dana. They produce 250% more than the average. In fact, most companies shouldn't really be adding to salespeople, as they probably should be consolidating their sales organizations and giving probably their best people more territory, assuming that they can handle it. And here's where they're making their mistakes. And I'm going to show you this, and we've only got a couple more slides. But this is the candidate pool that exists in every industry of every client you will ever speak to. We have what we call non-candidates, the preferred candidates, where we're going to get the A players and B players, and then what we have is we have what we call the aggressive candidate pool. Let me explain them to you very quickly. The non-candidates, why do you even talk about non-candidates? Well, first of all, non-candidates are people that aren't going anywhere. They're owners, they're equity players, they have a piece of the action, their family's involved, they're nearing retirement, they could have health issues, But basically, the common denominator here is these people know who some of the top people in the industry are, and they're not afraid to tell you. They're a great source of preferred candidates. That's the only reason we even talk about the non-candidate pool. The preferred candidate pool is interesting. These people are not on the Internet. They're not on Monster. They're not on Career Builder. They're not out sending resumes to your websites. They're not calling you and asking you for an interview. These people are actively successful at what they do. They're respected and admired by their peers. They have a laundry list of accomplishments, and they're not out actively looking for a position. Those are the people that you're going to find through the sources that I had up there earlier. Now, let me make sure that you understand, because they're not looking, okay, the only reason these people will make a change are for these reasons up here. You notice that money is not on the top of the list. Unless you have a compelling value proposition, the challenge of the opportunity, the desire to make a difference, to do something spectacular, to be part of a special team in a special atmosphere, the financial package means nothing. Can you imagine just offering somebody more money but none of those other things are in place? It's silly. So, and you know that a preferred candidate, even if they accept, is going to get a counteroffer because their current organization is not going to let them go. So unless it is going to be for those issues up there, a better challenge, ability to make a difference, a great team and atmosphere to work in, they're not going anywhere. But let's talk about the candidate pool that's always going somewhere. And that's what we call the aggressive candidate pool. These are the folks that are on Monster, Career Builder. Now, don't get me wrong. I want to say something. If just because someone's on Monster or Career Builder or an Internet site doesn't mean they're a bad candidate. It means that the hiring manager has to be greatly sophisticated in how they're going to screen these people between who's really good and who's just someone that's out there always looking. You see what they're called? Restless and dissatisfied. They continue to look even after they've gained a position. Their average stay in an organization is less than 2 years. They have no track record of accomplishments, and the interview is defensive because they're constantly defending the number of changes that they've made and the lack of accomplishments in their organization. And the only reason, the majority of the reasons that they change is just for more money. The first question they'll always ask, what's the money? What's the base? What's the package? What's this? They don't ask about what's the challenge, what are the duties and responsibilities, what's the company trying to accomplish, how can I really make a legacy for myself. They don't talk about any of those things. They talk about money. And this is that webinar, Dana, where I run for hiring managers, where they're really able to sort out, how do I interview people from the aggressive candidate pool? Because obviously they have to be interviewed differently, because the preferred candidate isn't interviewed. They are courted. And I want to say that again. I want to make sure everybody heard that. Candidates coming from the Internet, from your website that are calling you, they need to be screened and interviewed and so on and so forth. The people that are coming from a preferred candidate pool need to be courted. And then once they're courted, then you can begin to get into a very sophisticated interview and screening and probing process. So there's totally two different segments here that a hiring manager has to deal with. And this is one of the reasons, or I should say the major reason, why you're seeing such bad hires out there. So look, it's simple. We've got to get back to the sustained training and development. And we've got to set a standard in place that says we are never going to hire anyone who's less than a B player who can become an A player. And obviously, the last thing is we've really got to start training, whether it's our HR folks, our hiring managers, how to attract and really go after the preferred candidate pool, because that is an art unto itself. So I would basically tell you, Dana, that at this point, I think I've covered all the information. And let's just review it quickly. Employees, they're kind of frazzled right now. We've got to reinvigorate them. Our clients, we've got to get back to our core clients and make sure that they know we still love them. And then when we do have a problem and we do lose someone, we've got to go out and we've got to learn to focus on a better standard of quality of candidate, no matter what the organization or the department is. Okay, Dana?
Excellent. Wow. Don't you have two more slides there?
Well, I have a couple, but I just think they're basically things that we've already talked about as far as the summary goes, right?
Okay.
Just what I said. Focus on the employees, re-engage with the core clients, improve the quality of the people that you're going to go after. The cost of bad hires are killing organizations, and they just don't see it on – I mean, there's no line item on their P&L. They're getting killed in revenue. They're losing gross margin. It's killing their bottom line.
I like that. Why don't you go to the next slide? That's the key.
Well, that's true. I mean, look, what everybody has to understand is there's no magic bullet. They're not going to go out and do this overnight. If they start now, they'll start to see improvements probably in the fourth quarter, first quarter of next year. But this is not something you fix. I mean, you can start engaging the employees, you can start engaging the clients now, but you're really not going to see the benefit of that for probably 6 to 9 months.
That's a big investment.
Well, and you know, you don't have to throw a lot of money at this, Dana. This is really about engaging with the people, talking about their concerns, finding out what they want to do in the organization, what their strengths and weaknesses are, where you can help the employees grow professionally. That means a lot. Employees want to be in an organization where they feel that they're being invested in as well as they are investing in the organization. So it's really a mutual deal now. Remember, it's not the old tradition where you go to work and you're there for 30 years and then you retire. You look at the average stay by a lot of employees, the average stay is less than 24 months. And that's because of leadership. That's because of training issues, a lack of investment. What companies are saying is, I need you to come in and hit the ground running. I need you to come in and hit the ground running because I can't train you. I can't do that. I just need you to come in and help me turn this company around. And the employee is saying, well, what are you doing for me? Are you going to train me? Are you going to help me take the next step in my career? This isn't just about me being your donkey. You're just not going to ride my coattails. This has got to be a mutual love affair. See, it's not like the old days, where the tradition was you can work people till they drop. Now it's got to be a mutual relationship. Do you have some questions at all, Dana? I don't know if I can answer them.
Actually, why don't we go to the next? If anybody has any questions, throw them in. Joe, why don't you go to the last slide there? Because you're ending on a really powerful note. Our next open line is going to be on collaboration. For a collaborative team and tips and best practice. So you can sign up now. It's going to be on July 27th. We had quite a few people sign up for this. You have an early opportunity to do so. Also, we're going to be sending you in the next day or two a copy of the PowerPoint and the audio for those of you attending. So you can share this with others or also within your association. If you want to share it with your members, you need to talk to us about that first. But please get the word out. This is a very powerful program. And, Joe, I want to thank you for your time today and for all the valuable ideas that you shared. If you'd like to contact Joe to have further discussion on specifics about your industry, your team, spend some one-to-one time discussing ideas shared today or other information, you'll see Joe's contact information in the lower left-hand corner. Give Joe a call, email, The ideas were amazing. And then, Joe, your other webinars that you hold, when's your next one? Do you have a date set for that?
No, I'm going to take some vacation, and then we'll send out a notice on that.
Because those really go into a great deal of depth and will complement everything you shared today. The information shared today is a property of Lighthouse Consulting Services, LLC. We're located in San Monica, California. Our mission statement, to bring effective insight to your organization. If you'd like more information on our services, please write me at dana@lighthouseconsulting.com. If you have other topics you'd like us to address, please let us know. Thank you so much for joining us, and we're looking forward to having you join us for our next Keeping on Track Open Line program. Have a wonderful day. Joe, hold on for a second. And you know what I'm going to do is let me turn the recording equipment off, and I'm going to open up the line to see if anyone would like to talk directly to you if you have time.
Okay.